RV Family Travel Atlas is sponsored by the Thetford Corporation. The industry expert and innovation leader, Thetford has made RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. To see a complete lineup of products, visit Thetford.com.
And by Jayco. Since 1968, Jayco has been providing a way for generations of families to create lasting memories. For more information, visit your local Jayco dealer or head on over to Jayco.com.
And by Cabela's. Cabela's has everything you need to get your family into the great outdoors. Visit Cabela's.com and make sure your next camping adventure is one for the record books.
And by Highway West Vacations. Highway West invites you to connect with family, friends, and nature as you experience the beauty and adventure found in the great American West. Visit HighwayWestVacations.com to start planning your next great trip today.
Welcome to this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we write about RV and family travel with our three boys, Theo, Max, and Wes.
You can read about our adventures at RVFamilyTravelAtlas.com. And you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
On this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas, we are checking off a bucket list item by interviewing Michael Stern, co-author of Road Food, an eater's guide to more than 1,000 of the best local hotspots and hidden gems across America.
We have traveled with the Road Food book in each of our campers since day one. It has led us to some of the best barbecue joints and lobster shacks in America. If you don't have a copy yet, we don't know what you're waiting for.
You might think every meal has to be cooked over the campfire if you are a true RV enthusiast, but we know that finding a great road food joint makes an ordinary trip into an epic adventure. You are listening to episode number 135. Ready, set, Road Food.
Before we head into this week's RVFTA News Roundup, it's time for a sponsored message from our friends at Highway West Vacations.
Highway West Vacations offers luxury accommodations throughout the western United States. From RV and tent sites to cabins, cottages, vintage trailers, and hotel room rentals, each resort offers unique spaces and stylish amenities for all types of travelers. Come explore the great outdoors and experience a new way of vacationing as you travel the Highway West. Visit HighwayWestVacations.com to start planning today.
I was reading my guidebooks for the Pacific Northwest last night before bed.
Ramping up.
My gosh, does it sound amazing out there?
Yeah, we're diving into the national parks out there.
A lot of national parks.
It's going to be
hard. I'm so excited for Mount Rainier. I'm so excited for the Redwoods.
We're going to have to make some choices.
We're going to have to make some hard decisions.
Yeah, it's hard decision time coming up.
Big thank you to all the companies that participated in our spring gear guide giveaways. So Thetford, Camp Casual, and Country Archer all gave us really generous gifts to help celebrate the spring gear guide. Congrats to all our winners, and thank you to all of those companies for making the gear guide a little bit more fun this spring.
And in case you missed them, you can go over to RVFamilyTravelAtlas.com and download all of the products. We've put together product guides for both of the gear guides, Kate's Camp Kitchen, and then our spring gear guide along with Brett. All of the products that we talked about are there in a nice handy-dandy PDF with linkable links. Those are called hyperlinks.
Linkable links.
Linkable links.
Makes me think of sausage.
Linkable links.
Makes me think of a nice big breakfast at the Pacific Northwest at a campground.
All right. We're going to stop thinking about breakfast and get focused.
Just reminding you, April 29th and April 30th is the Camping Classic at your local Cabela store. Tons of great deals on camping and RV gear. There's going to be presentations and workshops at all the stores. And on April 29th, on Saturday, we will be at the Hamburg store hanging out from 11 to 3. We are there simply to meet and greet our podcast listeners, say hello, maybe walk you around and show you some great Cabela's camping gear.
Absolutely. So hopefully, fingers crossed for good weather. But if not, even if it's inclement weather, you can find us inside at the camping store.
We have a plan for that, right?
We do.
If there's good weather, we'll be outside and there's going to be RVs set up using Cabela's gear to show you how you can outfit your RV with Cabela's gear. If it's rainy, we'll just go into the camping store inside Cabela's. So either way, we're good. Okay. Come and say hello. Definitely. And some of of our podcast listeners are actually thinking about camping out nearby to come by, hang out, and spend some time with us. And I was really thrilled to hear that.
Oh, that's fun. We'll have to share maybe a couple of campgrounds right around there next week if we can find any.
Yes, absolutely. No, there are some because people were talking about
Let's dig them out and
People
share.
Were talking about it on our Facebook group, which has been absolutely hopping and bopping, filled with lots of great advice on camping, destinations, food, and gear, and lots of good info. We have over 1,000 people on the group now after only about 3 weeks.
Yeah, love it so far. Really just been happy with all the posts, all the comments, super friendly. Everything's going really swell. So
Everything
thumbs up.
Is going swell. Is this the Hardy Boys? Boys chum?
That's what we want. We want like this sort of like old timey, like collegiate attitude, right?
Talking about old timey, I've been reading The Boys, The Hardy Boys at
night. Yeah.
And you know what? It's been a little hard for me.
Why?
Because guess what all the girls do in the Hardy Boys books?
Do they like swoon over the boys?
They do nothing.
Yeah, I know.
And they have such an adventurous mom. You know, yeah. That I don't know if the Hardy Boys are right for us.
It's funny. I have to go back. I loved Nancy Drew when I was younger. Loved Nancy
Drew. Did the boys do nothing in Nancy Drew?
I don't know. I have to go back. Like, now I want to go back and read a Nancy Drew and see if, like, that gender thing was so...
We're on book 4 of the Hardy Boys, and every time the book's about to get exciting, the girl characters, like, leave the scene.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, gotta get
yeah,
out.
Yeah, it's like, see you later.
Peace out. We'll let the boys take care of this.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, another, in case you missed it from this past week, there is a blog post up. We finally did a roundup of the RV bed items and like products that we have bought over all the years. So I called it Making the RV Bed, Sleeping as Comfortably on the Road as You Do at Home. Over the last 2 years, we finally got comfortable in our bed.
Really comfy cozy. Like, yeah. I fall asleep the second my head hits the pillow in the RV.
From
you
that,
did a swell job
thanks,
on
me.
That blog post and on making our RV bedroom so much more comfortable. And now in the toy holder, we have a pretty much like what I would consider a full-size RV bedroom with a walk-around bed. And I can stand up and change in there, which I couldn't do before.
Yeah, and one of the things that I do in that roundup is I say all the stuff that we've used. And then I also added in some extra recommendations that other people had used from our forum and from the Facebook group. I started to do that with the Facebook group a little because we can only test so many products. And, you know, like there might be somebody that wants a more expensive one or a less expensive one. So it's really nice to be able to share like those products that other people recommend too. So thank you to everybody who kind of chimed in with those recommendations.
We also want to remind everybody that on episode 7 of RV Family Travel Atlas, we did a whole episode on road food. So this is our second complete episode on road food. That episode was totally different than this one. So you have two great episodes celebrating this amazing book that's been such a part of our epic RV adventure. So go back and check out episode 7 as well as a companion to this episode.
And before we go, one more thing that I wanted to mention, because we haven't mentioned it in a while, is we've been doing Facebook Live like most Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern time. And it's been really fun. Like it's just been a really great way to wrap up the week. And we know that not everybody can watch it at that time, but a lot of people are watching it afterwards and later on that night or later on in the weekend. And it's a really fun back and forth for us with our audience to dive in more into the topics that we talked about on the podcast, but also answer questions, that kind of thing.
And why don't we give away another copy of Road Food on this Friday's Facebook Live? Let's
okay.
Okay.
It's a plan. All right.
Now, let's introduce Michael Stern. I mean, Jane and Michael Stern are the authors of Road Food. The book is in its 10th edition. The first edition came out 40 years ago. It's an American classic. It really is. Just it's part of the American landscape for us. It's a travel classic. It's a culinary classic. It combines those two elements. Stephanie, why has this book been so meaningful to us over the years as travelers?
You know, I've used this term before, and this is another example of kismet for me. Like when we started RVing, we were new to it. It's not like we had this like history of camping and everything before we had our kids. So we both took up RVing and parenthood at like about the same time. And everybody knows how eating out becomes like a nightmare.
stressful.
With kids.
A drama. It's right. Like you can't enjoy your meal and you're nervous and you're worried and their behavior and all of that stuff.
Yeah. And I just feel like it was this perfect marriage because at the time, you know, we really love food. When we travel, we really enjoy, you know, taking in the local cuisine. That's a big part of travel for us, and which our listeners know because we talk about it a lot. But when we started to travel with the kids, you know, obviously that's going to take a back seat. But it was so nice to have this book full of recommendations for places where, you know what, the bottom line is kids fit in.
Noisy diners.
Yeah.
At barbecue joints where you can eat outside on picnic tables. Places where families fit perfectly and a little bit of noise and maybe even a little bit of bad behavior are going to go practically unnoticed because everyone is shoving their face filled with ribs.
And there's food that's kid friendly too, from macaroni and cheese to tuna fish sandwiches, all that stuff, you know, that you just know are go-tos for your kids. You can get them there. It's just a stress-free kind of eating environment for us. And we still feel like we're not just going to a McDonald's. You know, we feel like we're just soaking in the local culture. So I think that it was just a real, it has been a companion with us, you know, on our entire
RV
journey.
And you say that like a companion, like a friend.
Yeah.
I mean, like literally, like we're bringing a friend along with us.
And now we can talk about Michael Stern that way instead of just his book.
So we have two segments. We're going to come back in a second with a really great interview with Michael Stern. So smart, so thoughtful. He's going to get you excited to get out on the road and get eating. And then we're going to come back in a second segment, and we're going to walk you through some of our favorite road food joints, and we're going to recommend campgrounds nearby as well, because obviously we've discovered these places as we were camping. So campground and road food recommendations in a Jeremy and Stephanie segment after this great interview with Michael Stern. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are beyond excited to be here with Michael Stern, the co-author of the American classic, the legendary Road Food. And we don't leave home without road food. But before we dive into our interview with Michael, we have a sponsored message by Jayco.
If luxurious travel and comfortable value are your aim, the Jayco Alante is for you. With one of the biggest vehicle windshields in the industry and the exclusive J-Ride package of premium ride and handling features, Alante Class A motorhomes are as exciting on the road as they are equipped at camp. And you can have peace of mind with Jayco's 2-year limited warranty. Visit your local Jayco dealer or jayco.com for more information. Jayco, generations of family fun. Now, Michael, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be here.
All right. You're going to have to forgive Jeremy if he stumbles
He's
starstruck.
Okay. You're forgiven, Jeremy.
I don't know that I've ever seen him. We interview a lot of people, and I don't think I've ever seen him this excited to talk to somebody. So I'm worried he's not going to make it through.
I feel like it's been a long time coming, too, because I have talked back and forth with you over the years through email. So it just finally feels like a full realization of this dream for me. So, Michael, this is the...
go ahead.
Keep talking.
That,
Michael's like, go ahead, tell me more.
No pressure or anything. You don't have to live up to any crazy ideals I have about you. So look, it's the 40th anniversary of Road Food. Why don't you take us back to the beginning? Like, how did this epic road trip get started? Why did you guys decide to write this book?
Completely accidentally. Neither Jane nor I have any intention of either becoming writers or getting involved with food. But after we got out of graduate school, we, like so many other Americans before us and since us, decided the thing to do was to hit the road, see what life was like out there. You know, we had spent a lot of time in, you know, the ivy-covered walls of academia, and we just wanted to see the real world. So we got in our car, started traveling around the country somewhat aimlessly, but began to focus on long-haul truck drivers. So in 1975, we wrote a book called Trucker, Portrait of the Last American Cowboy. And this was one of those photo essay books about the life of long-haul truck drivers, independent truck drivers, you know, which especially back then was a really kind of interesting, lonely, and somewhat insular life because these guys, you know, there was no CB radio. There were certainly no cell phones. These guys would drive all day. They'd arrive at the truck stop and be eager to share their stories. So anyway, we wrote this book, and while we were doing this book about truck drivers, along the way we kept finding these really good places to eat, you know, on back roads, some of the, a few truck stops. And we kept looking for a guidebook that would tell us where to find more of these as we traveled, and we realized there was no such guidebook. So when the book about truck drivers came out, we looked at each other and said, well, let's write that book. So we spent a few more years on the road, and the first edition of Road Food came out.
Now, you said in the foreword that the book was actually kind of challenging to get published initially, which is kind of hard to imagine now, 40 years later. What was the big challenge with getting it published?
Well, it really is hard to imagine from today's perspective, looking back to the mid-1970s, when publishers literally looked at us when we proposed this book and said there aren't enough interesting restaurants in the United States to fill a guidebook, which just seems so preposterous today. But in fact, that was the attitude of foodies back then. Of course, the term foodie hadn't even yet been coined. But, you know, back then, if you were somebody interested in food, it automatically meant you were interested in French food or, you know, European food, possibly Asian food or South American food. But very few people, I mean, there were some, but very few people paid much attention to interesting regional American food, not fancy food, but, you know, the food that we Americans eat every day. And nobody was kind of aware of just how amazingly diverse it is and how interesting it is and how much it reflects we as a country. And, you know, as I said, there were, James Beard had written about this and there were a few other writers, but nobody had really tried to sum it up. And that's what we tried to do in the first edition of Road Food.
Now, this is like, there's what, 1.2 million blogs out there about regional food?
It seems like it, yeah.
This is just par for the course these days. So when you were thinking about how you were going to plan out writing this book and how you were going to discover all these hidden regional gems, like, how did you pick your places? What made, you know, a good road food joint?
Well, it was really tough. I mean, you know, what we wanted to find, and this has remained true for the last 40 years, what we're always looking for is a restaurant that really reflects the taste, literally and in a broader sense, the taste of its region. You know, so if we're in Maine, we're looking for food and types of meals that you're only going to find in Maine. Same with Texas, Washington State, wherever you are. I mean, each part of this country has its own flavor, quite literally its own flavor. And what we were looking for was restaurants that expressed that flavor. Now, in those days, it was really hard to find them, you know, because there was no internet. And as I said, not that many people were paying attention to it. There were a few local regional guidebooks that were helpful, but a lot of our travels were simply hit and miss. I remember we used to actually look in phone book yellow pages, back then, and just look at interesting ads by restaurants, not necessarily big ones, but interesting ones. I remember for the first edition of Road Food, we were desperate to find interesting restaurants in Idaho. You know, who knows what's to eat in Idaho? Neither Jane nor I did. So we found ourselves a Boise, Idaho phone book at the New York Public Library. We're looking in the yellow pages, and there was a little display ad that said the Spud Bowl. And we looked at each other and said, whoa, great, Idaho potatoes, the Spud Bowl. This is just the kind of restaurant we're looking for. So we drove to Idaho only to discover that the Spud Bowl is a bowling alley.
Oh, my goodness.
So, well named.
So these places
were well named. And the only potatoes they were selling there were bags of potato chips. So, you know, a lot of it was hit and miss, needless to say.
So, look, these road food joints were so much harder to find back then, you know, pre-internet. But there must have also been a real sense of discovery and joy and accomplishment in finding them, correct?
Oh, totally, totally, totally. I mean, and that's something that to some degree, I mean, we still, you know, will come across a wonderful restaurant that no one has written about, you know, no one's put it on TV yet, and there still is that wonderful sense of discovery. But back then, I mean, we were, you know, there was that sense of we really felt like explorers, you know, and we were finding these things that maybe we had heard, you know, we had heard about persimmon pudding and, you know, but who knows what it is or where to get it. And you know, if we came across a restaurant in southern Indiana that was that had persimmon pudding on the menu, we thought, you know, eureka, you know, we were like prospectors who found gold. And that's the way it was all around the country, you know, to find real Texas chili in Texas or you know, gumbo in you know, Cajun gumbo or Creole gumbo. I mean, the differences between them, I mean, it was really and remains to a large degree just this tremendous sense of discovery, because there is so much in this country. We are such a diverse nation with just an unfathomably diverse cuisine.
Now, that sense of discovery in the food itself also seems to inspire the actual writing. Now, I'm an English teacher here. I'm going to get a little nerdy for a second. How does the food inspire the writing? Because I feel like there is a connection between the food and the way that you describe it.
Well, no doubt about that. I mean, our goal, I mean, you know, I don't know if this is, I hope this is obvious to anyone who reads Road Food, but our, you know, food on a plate in a vacuum, you know, is not all that interesting to us. I mean, maybe it tastes good and that's swell. You know, we all want food that tastes good. But what is inspiring about the food that we have found and continue to find is all of its connections, you know, and in those connections to the people who cook it, to the people who serve it, to the people who eat it, to the farmers who grow it, you know, to the fishermen who catch it, to the pitmasters who smoke it. I mean, that food has so many connections to all those people, and it's those connections that inspire the writing. I mean, and that's, you know, as much as I'm sure you know, it's very hard to describe the taste of food just as taste. I mean, there are a limited number of adjectives. It's crunchy, it's bitter, it's sweet, you know. But there isn't that much you can say. I mean, what's really interesting beyond that is, you know, well, this was grown by a farmer whose grandfather started the farm, or this is, you know, brought in by a fisherman who has his own shrimp boat, or, you know, that's what's so interesting about the food, and that to me is what's so inspiring about it.
And also hitting that eureka kind of moment with your reader where, you know, again, we might have heard of shoe fly pie, but to hear you actually tell us what it actually is and where you should go to get it is that eureka moment for a reader, you know?
I hope so. That would be ideally what would happen, yes.
I think of places like Curtis All-American Barbecue in Brattleboro, Vermont, which we would have never discovered without Road Food. And the actual location and the food being served out of an old school bus, it's such a part of the experience. It can't be separated from the food. It's all intertwined.
Exactly. And I mean, that to me is the most fun is, you know, places that, I mean, of course I love a wonderful classic small town cafe, you know, where everyone goes there at 4:30 in the morning and pours their own coffee. And, you know, those are great, but it's also fun to find really unlikely restaurants. I mean, there used to be a great restaurant in the Los Angeles police shooting range. They had a cafe there, you know, so while you were eating, you would hear guys practicing at the shooting range in the background. I mean, places like that are just so much fun because they're so much a part of where you are. I mean, they really give a flavor of literally a flavor of where you are.
Now, you said used to be. I imagine after 40 years, it's sad to see some of these places go.
It is. And that does happen. But, you know, it's funny because I think when we started Road Food, if you had asked me then what's the future going to be, I would have been much more pessimistic then than I am now about the future. Because back then, I would have predicted that the future is going to be all either fast food, you know, just like junk food, same coast to coast, or very fine, you know, elevated, you know, four-star dining type cuisine. And in fact, what's happened over the last 40 years is that we Americans have really developed a tremendous appreciation for all that kind of regular food that people eat. And in fact, one of the byproducts of that appreciation is that restaurants that might 20 or 30 years ago have gone out of business when the proprietor retires, in fact, are often now taken over either by their children or by other people, say a waitress who's been there for several years, because the idea of running a restaurant like that is now a much more kind of honorable profession. You know, it used to be that if you ran a restaurant, your greatest goal in life would be that your kids would grow up and become doctors or lawyers, because running a restaurant was so, you know, kind of déclassé. But I think nowadays, you know, we really appreciate our cooks and dare I say it, chefs. I mean, I think the idea of running an interesting regional restaurant is a very cool thing to do. And in that sense, while, yes, a lot of places have gone out of business, there are a lot of ones that are continuing and a lot of new ones opening up, which is really kind of amazing.
Now, you just talked about two things that were interesting to us, both sort of that like rise of the interest in regional food, but then also the rise in the availability of fast food. But, you know, I a lot of the time I think of another kind of food group, which is those chains, right? Not necessarily the fast food, but like the availability to a traveler of like something that's familiar, like a Cracker Barrel or an Applebee's. Mm-hmm. And I know that when we're traveling, right, especially on those highways, you know, you'll go through these areas where there's just these great swaths of like restaurants that you know from back home. You know, do you think that you know, a lot of people, it's hard to sort of find those regional hidden gems just sort of like in the maze of all of these bright lights of these chain restaurants?
It's very hard. And I mean, and sometimes there are no hidden gems to be found, which, and, you know, I understand, you know, if you're traveling, if time is of any matter to you, you know, you don't want to spend half a day looking for an excellent breakfast. I mean, most people don't. I do, but most people don't. You know, and I think I understand, you know, and a lot of the time you want an easy to eat quick meal, something familiar. And, you know, I think some of the chains vary. I mean, there are some that I actually like. I wouldn't, you know, road food is all about unique restaurants and places that are not chains, but I totally understand that those places really fill a need. And as I said, I mean, there really are parts of this country where it's very hard to find a hidden gem because there really might not be one there.
Right. Okay. So they serve a traveling function.
It's also easy to park.
Without a doubt. Without
yeah.
a doubt.
It's easy to park, too. The weary traveler does not necessarily want to turn into a downtown and struggle to find parking. A lot of these road food joints are part of the old downtown structures.
Right. All right.
That's exactly true. Yeah, the other day, actually, I was in Augusta, Georgia, and I had a really wonderful kind of classic barbecue meal. It was like a very simple barbecue place, and there was no dessert, and I was really hungry for some dessert. So as I was driving away, I got on the highway, and there at one of the highway exits was a Culver's, you know, from that chain out of Wisconsin. And, you know, they have wonderful custard. So I stopped there, and I thought, well, I hope nobody spots me here, the road food guy eating at a chain. But in fact, I had a really good hot fudge sundae there. You know?
You need a disguise for when you head into anything that's like a chain.
Yeah. All right. Well, Michael, thank you so much for telling us a little about the history of road food. We are going to be back in a minute, and we're kind of going to pepper you with questions about your favorites and your own personal highlights from the last 40 years. Stay tuned.
Okay.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's time for part two of our interview with the co-author of Road Food, Michael Stern, and we are going to get really specific and pepper him with some tough questions. But first, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Cabela's.
Cabela's is passionate about getting families into the outdoors, and they believe that the best moments of our lives are found around a crackling campfire, spending time with family and friends. And Cabela has everything you need to make sure your next camping trip is one for the record books, so mark the next camping classic sale on your calendar. From April 29th through 30th, you will find amazing deals on all of your favorite outdoor brands. Visit a Cabela's store near you or check out cabelas.com for more information.
All right. Welcome back, Michael. Let's get regional here. And I almost feel bad asking you this, but do you have a favorite region for road food?
That's like asking me what's my favorite restaurant.
He makes me answer questions like this all the time, Michael. You just have to answer.
Okay, I do. Do I have a favorite region? Yes. And there's a good reason for it. My favorite region of the country for road food is the South. And the simple reason is that the South is very respectful of its traditions. So you find a lot of kind of long-lasting traditions in the South. And what's really interesting, what's happened over the last several decades, is that not only do you find examples of, you know, traditional boarding house meals and meat and three lunches and ham and biscuit breakfast, but you also see a lot of cooks and chefs doing kind of modern things with those traditions. And I think that's really exciting. You know, that yes, the South is very traditional, but it's also, there's a lot of energy in the South in terms of trying to create something new out of those traditions. So, I mean, for the road fooder, for somebody who's traveling around and wants to eat a lot of interesting, unique regional meals, I think the South is like the easiest place to do it because there's so much here.
Yeah. So, Michael, we've been going to joints that you've recommended in your book since our boys were babies. You know, they've been raised visiting, locations that are in road food, but it's so interesting that last year when we were down in Charleston, we visited the Early Bird Diner, and they were seven at the time. They had their first, what I perceive as their first transcendent food experience, where we had chicken and waffles, and we just had so much just great Southern, this huge Southern breakfast. And that was the first time we were leaving town at the end of our trip, and they were saying, can't we just go to the Early Bird Diner one time before we go home?
Oh, like, how great, yeah.
And they bring it up. They name check that restaurant now, too. And I just think that the South, like the food in the South, got in their bones, you know, in their bellies in a way mm-hmm. that food anywhere else that we've been hasn't.
Something special that you can't get at home. Now, if we were to hop into a car right now and go on a road trip with you, what state would you take us to in the South?
In the South, well, I mean, it's like Louisiana is like shooting fish in a barrel. There's so much good food in Louisiana. And New Orleans is a whole world unto itself. But beyond New Orleans, you know, out in Cajun country and in northern Louisiana, where not that many people write about it. I mean, there's a whole culture that is in some part classically Dixie Southern, but also has, you know, influences from Acadia, you know, the Canadians who came down with the whole kind of French accent. There's sort of a Caribbean influence from the South. Of course, there's all the soul food. I mean, in many ways, I think Louisiana and possibly New Mexico are the two states that have the most, the richest and most colorful and distinctive cuisines in this country.
I think that's the first time I've ever heard a foodie reference New Mexico. So could you just, I'm just very curious, could you just dive into what it is about the New Mexico sort of region that makes such an interesting food culture there?
Yeah, actually, New Mexico is fascinating. I mean, because it has its own cuisine. I mean, not every state has a cuisine. You know, Illinois has many interesting specialties, but there's no Illinois cuisine. But New Mexico is very into New Mexican foods, which is an interesting, like all interesting regional food. New Mexico is good because there are so many different influences in it. I mean, there's the Native American influence, you know, going way, way back. There's the kind of Southern influence, Southern, Southwestern influence, the Mexican influence, and a Spanish influence that is different from the Mexican influence. And, you know, what other state has an official state vegetable? New Mexico does, and it's the chili pepper. It's rare. What's interesting about New Mexican cuisine is that it's rare to go there and simply eat a bowl of chili like you would find in Texas. In fact, what they do is like everything that they cook there has chilies in it or on it or around it or stuffed into it or on top of it. In fact, you know, it's a very vibrant, it's a very spicy cuisine, and it is so colorful. I mean, literally brilliant, beautiful, easy to photograph. But sort of in terms of it, the tastes are so divergent, diverse, exciting. In fact, I'm on my way to New Mexico next week, so I'm very much looking forward to trying, you know, green chili cheeseburgers, carne adobada, which is pork marinated in chili, you know, enchiladas of all kinds, blue corn tortillas. I mean, the number of specialties that are unique to New Mexico is kind of endless.
I love how you have your eating list all ready for your trip to New
Mexico. Oh, yeah, I'm working on it.
I am drooling right now.
That's a great
and make sure
list.
You follow Road Food Now, like on Instagram.
On Instagram,
you can
yeah.
see pictures of the food as they go.
All right. So now, I don't know if this is a giveaway question or not, but do you have a favorite meal for road food, right? Breakfast, lunch, or dinner? Like, is there something that you feel like is just like a giveaway as a favorite time to go to a road food joint?
Yes, the answer to that is absolutely without a doubt, yes, and that meal is breakfast.
Right.
not only because breakfast is so interesting, you know, different around the countries, whether you're eating, you know, beignets in Louisiana or muffins in Massachusetts or biscuits in Alabama, but more going back to that thing we were talking about before about how the food is not just about, I mean, a good meal is not just about the food. It's about the whole ambiance, the spirit of it. And what I love is going to a restaurant for breakfast that's the kind of place where regulars go. You know, so you walk into the place and people might be helping themselves to their own coffee. There will be a table of regulars who sort of come and go as the meal goes on. And I think there's a real sense of being able to kind of rub elbows with the community in a way that you can't in almost any other situation. I mean, you know, you're sitting next to people, eating with them. I mean, it is, after all, a kind of intimate act. And it's, you know, if you're all curious, especially if people see you taking pictures of your food, which, you know, people used to think I was crazy for doing that. Now everyone does it. But, you know, if people realize that you're interested in the food, it's so easy to strike up a conversation. And then the meal becomes about something more than just what you're eating. It really becomes about being in a new, different, interesting town and really, if not making friends with people, certainly becoming acquainted with people that you might not otherwise meet. And that's much easier to do at breakfast than it is at lunch or dinner.
All right. And I want to kind of dive in a little to something that you just talked about there, because, you know, travelers listen to our show, right? We have a show about RV travel. People who love to travel listen to our show every week. And I think that sometimes as a traveler, it can be very intimidating to like walk into those places where it's like, it feels like the record skips when you walk in, you know, it's like, oh, who are these people? These are not regulars.
Yeah.
But what you just said there was like more about travel than I think it was about food. Like learning a place, it takes you opening up to conversation, right? And to like really interacting with the people in these places in order to learn more about the food and about the location.
Yes, and that, you're absolutely right, and that has become so much easier because, as I said, you know, when we started some 40 years ago, people used to think I was, like, a lunatic, like, literally crazy. Why would somebody take a picture of their cheeseburger? You know, because I would take pictures of everything we ate. Why would you take a picture of a piece of blueberry pie? No, you know, fellow restaurateurs, fellow diners and restaurateurs just couldn't figure out, you know, why would anyone want to do that? And, you know, now, you know, as we all know, it's not uncommon for people to document what it is they're eating. And in that same vein, just as it's not uncommon for people to take pictures of their food, I think it's much more common, much more likely for food and your interest in food to be a great kind of conversation opener in a restaurant. I mean, again, a lot depends on sort of the actual design of the restaurant. Sitting at a counter, for example, tends to be much more conducive to opening up a conversation than sitting in a private booth, for example. Although there are many diners where there are a lot of booth-to-booth conversations as well. But, yeah, I think, you know, nowadays I think so many more people are interested in food that it's become, it's really become a wonderful kind of conversation opener, you know, that you're just as to say, you know, to say to a waitress loud enough for other people to hear, you know, I love this blueberry pie. Are there any other places in town that have good pie? Or we need to find some place to eat lunch. Are there any good places here? I mean, if you say that question loud enough for five or six people to hear, I will bet that somebody's going to chime in and start talking to you about their favorite place to eat. And once you do that, you know, the sky's the limit as to where you can go.
Michael, we've over the years have really thought that road food is great for families and great for kids. Can you talk about that at all? I mean, when we first started traveling after having kids again, we realized, okay, we can go to a road food joint with our little boys where maybe we couldn't go to a fancier restaurant. I mean, have you ever thought about that, that this is a great book for people with young families to get out and enjoy food again?
Without a doubt, it is. I mean, that wasn't, you know, the purpose wasn't to create a book for people with families. But, you know, fundamentally, you know, 99 out of 100 restaurants in road food are very inexpensive. Most of them, you don't need a reservation, or all of them, really, you don't need a reservation. You don't need to dress up. They're casual, they're relaxed. You know, kids tend to be welcome in these places. And in that, you know, sort of the ideal road food restaurant is by definition going to have some kids in it because it's a reflection of the whole community. And it's pretty, I mean, there are a few parts of this country where the best interesting regional food is, in fact, served in taverns. You know, say Milwaukee and much of Wisconsin, some of the best fish fries, for example, are served in taverns. And you might think, oh, taverns, that's not for kids. But in fact, these taverns are as family friendly as a place can be. You know, in most parts of the country, a tavern means pretty much adults only. And in fact, in many parts of the country, it's by law adults only. But in other parts of the country, like Wisconsin and parts of Maryland, some of the best regional food is served in taverns and in an ambiance that is totally fine for kids and kind of very family friendly.
And I'm also, like, as you're talking, I'm thinking of the word democratic, just really like just a place for the people, right? Across, you know, whoever those people
exactly
are in that area. So
exactly. I mean, road food is not snooty. That's the one, that's for sure.
Right. That's a good way to put it. So now the reason why we were able to grab you and get you on this show is that you just recently released the 10th edition of this book, which we have in front of us, and we are so excited to snatch up our new copy, even though we have plenty of copies already in the house. So why don't you just tell us a little bit about kind of the tweaks, right, in this 10th edition? How did you redesign it, and, you know, what was the goal?
Well, okay, so here's what's different about the 10th edition than some of than the earlier editions is, first of all, it has over 1,000 restaurants in it, which is far more than any previous edition. I think the last edition before this had maybe 800 or 900, whatever. Anyway, there are 1,000 restaurants in it, which is more than any before. We also have the Road Food Honor Roll at the beginning of the book, which is a list of our 100 most favorite restaurants all around the country. These are places that we think just really reflect something absolutely wonderful about American food, and they're spread out all around the country. So that honor roll is an addition to this. Also, one of the things that we added in this edition, which was not true, I think, is that every restaurant that has one, we've listed their website. You know, so it's very easy to, you know, if you've got a mobile device, you can just like, and you're traveling, you can go onto the onto their website and sort of check out the menu and see what they're doing. So in that sense, we tried to make this edition as user-friendly as possible.
I also love that the map pages are of a darker color, so it's really easy to kind of run your thumb through it and find the maps, because I really like looking at the maps of the states and seeing where everything's located. That seemed like a really nice addition.
Yeah, it is. And I'll tell you, one thing I was really happy with is the book is very well-bound. I mean, I hope that people will take this book, carry it with them, get it smudged with barbecue sauce and gravy, and, you know, it feels to me, I haven't yet, it's only been out a few weeks, so I haven't yet put it to the test, but it feels to me like a really sturdy book. It's not going to fall apart on you like some guidebooks do. And that, literally, physically, I think that's important.
Yes, absolutely. So,
well, it does travel with us.
And we have, I think it's a tradition for a lot of road food fans to have the cooks sign their names next to the restaurant as well, which we've done over the years. Michael,
cool.
This was an awesome conversation. I really appreciate you coming on the show. Where else can people find...
My pleasure.
Oh, our pleasure entirely. Where else can our listeners find your work and your world out there?
Well, go to roadfood.com on the internet, and there you will find reviews and photographs of over 2,000 favorite restaurants around the country. And also there's a forum there where you can engage in discussions about, there's a hamburger forum, a pizza forum, a breakfast forum, you know, whatever is on your mind, culinarily speaking. Road Food has a place for you to talk about it with other food-crazed people around the country.
Well, Michael, I have to say thank you on a very personal level. You've brought a lot of joy into our travels with our young kids and really helped us feel like it was a possibility and it was accessible to discover food treasures even while traveling with young kids in an RV. So you have been a part of this journey, and we really
are
happy.
You guys have just led us to so many places, to White House Subs in Atlantic City, to Chicken Boots Deli in Annapolis, to Curtis. The list goes on and on and on. So next time you're in New Jersey, please let us know. We'll take you to White House Subs and treat you to a sub.
Oh, I'm going to take you up on that one. I love White House Subs.
Oh, my gosh. We were just there like 2 weeks ago. Just as good as it's ever been. Thank you so much for your time today.
All right. Happy eating in New Mexico, Michael.
All right. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Welcome back to the show, everybody, and a huge thank you to Michael Stern for that terrific interview. Truly one of my favorite interviews that we've ever done in 135 episodes of RVFTA. And also a big thank you to our sponsor, Thetford.
Thetford is the industry expert and innovation leader, and they have been making RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. Thetford manufactures Norcold refrigerators, and we have had a Norcold refrigerator keeping our food cold for the last 5 years without one single issue. And now we have one in our new trailer as well.
And it's bigger.
It's bigger. Woohoo. More space. All right. So Norcold refrigerators are uniquely designed for the RV experience, built to withstand the demands and rigors of the road. They automatically switch to propane if electricity is unavailable, and you can run the refrigerator on LP if you need to use all your electric power for AC. Or you can go off the grid and dry camp while still enjoying the convenience of cold food storage. To learn more, visit Thetford.com today.
And of course, you can put your road food leftovers in your Norcold fridge.
Oh my gosh, that's one of the things I hate when we travel and we stay in a hotel, like when we're doing an RV
show
or something.
You gotta throw away the leftovers.
And we
it's
go
painful.
Out to eat, and they're like, do you want to wrap that up? And I'm like, no, because I don't have any place to keep it.
One
I
of those
that.
Little secret advantages of RV travel, you can bring home leftovers.
I'm a big leftover fan. I'm actually obsessive about leftovers. You not so much, but.
So what we're gonna do in this segment is we're gonna walk you through some of our favorite road food joints and then recommend a nearby campground so you can combine camping and finding great road food. You want to start in New England?
Of course, because that's where our RV travels began, right?
New England was really launching pad for our great RV adventures. Let's go to Connecticut first, and let's go to Abbott's Lobster in the Rough. Now, for each of these recommendations, I'll just read a couple of lines from Jane and Michael Stern's sparkling prose, and then we'll recommend a campground, and Stephanie can chat about the meal we had there. In the Rough was never so agreeable. On an alfresco dining area perfumed by sea breezes and protected from marauding seagulls, one dines on lobster steamed to such perfect plumpness that meat erupts when the shell is broken. And again, that's Abbott's Lobster in the Rough. What do you remember about this meal?
Yeah, well, what I remember about the location, first of all, is it's an absolute epic road food location because it does have those picnic tables that overlook the water. And if you go there at, you know, around sunset, you can bring your own bottle of wine, bring your own cold beers.
And prepare to wait in line.
Yes, yes. Not if you go during the week, you know what I mean? Like, stay away from these places during the week or go early. That's always a recommendation. Eat dinner at 4:30 or eat dinner a little bit later. But this is actually where Wesley was about a year old at this point, and he was eating people food at the table with us. You know, he would have nothing to do with baby food, and he fell in love with clam chowder at Abbott's.
And he still loves – all the boys love clam chowder.
Yeah. And I think that that's because when they were all very, very young, they were eating clam chowder up at seafood shacks up and down the New England coast, you know, in their infancy.
I'm so glad they love seafood. It took me a long time. I didn't like seafood when was a kid. And the campground recommendation, there's the Mystic KOA, which is nearby. It's a really nice KOA.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend Mystic as a long weekend getaway. It's a really charming spot to
visit. It's not really a week-long trip for me.
I don't think so.
Right, but a three-day weekend. Or it's a nice stopover on your way up to Maine, you know, if you're coming from New York, New Jersey.
And we were coming back from a long trip, and we stayed there.
Now, there are a lot of KOAs connected to these road food joints, and that was not – it was not intentional. It's just like there's a lot of KOAs near road food joints.
Yeah, I wonder if
there's... Let's go a little further north to New Hampshire, and let's go to the Sunny Day Diner in Lincoln, New Hampshire, and I have a little quote to read about that one. Corned beef hash is rich and luxurious, as are biscuits and gravy. You can have French toast made with banana bread and served, of course, with real maple syrup. What do you remember about this great diner?
I remember that the boys loved the pancakes, and I loved the eggs benedict. The hollandaise sauce was excellent.
Was that like the best eggs benedict you've had? I remember you really raving about it.
Don't even go there, because I'm an eggs benedict connoisseur. I've had eggs benedict everywhere, man. Okay, so I can't quite name
that.
That's
a little Johnny Cash illusion, wasn't it?
Because I honestly, if you want to make me happy, but
that was so sly.
A huge platter of eggs benedict in front of me. So, but theirs was definitely a highlight.
Fell in love with you all over again.
Go ahead.
She's putting illusions in to Johnny Cash.
Now,
the campground there is the Lincoln Woodstock KOA. Just a classic KOA, one of our favorite KOAs, and that's nearby, about 10 minutes away from this diner. Do you want to go to Vermont?
Yes, always.
I always want to go to Vermont. And it's like, I love Vermont every bit as much as I love Maine, and there's no ocean in Vermont, so go figure. Let's go to Curtis All-American Barbecue in Putney. This is near the Brattleboro KOA, and I'll read you a line about Curtis's from the book. Curtis Tufts Barbecue is more a picnic than a restaurant. Orders are placed and food retrieved from a blue painted school bus, one of several planted in a meadow outfitted with picnic tables. Stephanie, what do you remember?
And really old kids' toys everywhere.
And there's dogs everywhere.
All right. There was actually, and I have to like dig it up, our blog, those old blog posts, you never know what they're going to look like. But I specifically remember writing a blog post about this place because we were really into, we had, the boys were little at the time, they were two, I think, and we were really into packing lunch. It had worked really well for us. So we'd make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, applesauce, you know, that kind of a thing in a cooler. And we actually had a packed lunch and we were driving down the road and we saw Curtis's and you said, that's in the road food book, I think.
Because you can see the blue school buses, these old beat up blue painted school buses. You can't miss it.
So we were actually, I remember this day so well, we were buying diapers.
I don't even remember that.
You remember there was a health food store?
Oh, now I remember the health food store.
There was a health food store that we passed, and we were running short on diapers, and we went into the health food store to buy diapers.
Organic diapers, I'm
sure.
And then we went and had some delicious, not organic barbecue.
Yeah. So, I said, you know what? Forget the lunch in the cooler. Forget peanut butter and jelly. Like when you are confronted with Curtis's bus, you eat at Curtis's bus. And it was a great travel moment.
I remember the ribs. They cook the ribs right out in the open. Like this place would be shut down in New Jersey.
Oh, yeah. There's
like,
dogs
was our running
everywhere,
joke.
People.
There's dogs all around the place.
Yeah.
The owner's dogs. They're cooking out in the open. Like in New Jersey, like this would not be allowed.
No. People, you can't be like persnickety at some of these places. Like you got to be all in, right? You have to
it
be,
is
like,
all
game.
In.
Game on.
It is all in. A little further up the road in the same town in Putney, Vermont, there's the Putney Diner. This was also awesome. And again, we camped at the Brattleboro KOA. So I'll read a little bit about the Putney Diner from Jane and Michael Stern. Eggs can be ordered with kielbasa or corned beef hash, and broad-topped muffins are split and toasted on the grill. At lunch, you can count on square meals of meatloaf or shepherd's pie, foot-long hot dogs and grilled buns, herby creamy mac and cheddar cheese, or, in cool weather, the arcane Yankee favorite, American chop suey. I didn't have the chop suey,
but
I certainly did have a toasted corn muffin. My God, it was good.
Yeah. We went actually on another trip was when we visited this diner, not on the same one as we had first gone to Curtis's. And I remember that we had gone on a really like a longish hike for the boys at that age. And then we all had these kind of like big hearty lunches. Like I had a hot turkey sandwich with gravy, which is always like my comfort food go-to for some reason. And I think you had meatloaf. I think you had the meatloaf sandwich.
It, this is a comfort food joint and we were there in the summer, this would be a great place and on a winter day.
And pie, they raved about their pie. So, and I remember going in and they have the pies, like they're different every day and they had them lined up and everything. So we all had dessert. And
oh my gosh, you know, the pies. What kind of pie did we have? The pie
was so good. I can't remember what kind of pie, but I specifically remember pie was a thing. I think, I think I had banana cream pie when we were there.
Mm.
So, I mean, it was really just like.
And you can hike Mount Putney before lunch here. Mount Putney is a gorgeous family hike. And then you
I
could
think
come
that's
down.
What we
that's
did.
That's exactly
yep.
what we did. And then the Brattleboro KOA is an adorable little KOA and just a really cute part of Vermont. So if you want to experience southern Vermont, stay at the Brattleboro KOA. And then there's two road food options right, literally right up the road from the KOA. Are you ready to head south, Stephanie?
I guess. I always hate leaving New England, but we've had some good times in the South,
for,
too.
For so. Food, the South, it doesn't get better than the South, and Michael Stern confirmed this. All right, so we're going to recommend Chicken Ruth's Deli. It's on Main Street in Annapolis, Maryland, a really charming little town close to Washington, D.C. Now, let me read a little bit about Chicken Ruth's. Being near the District of Columbia, Chicken Ruth's Deli has its own twist on the kosher-style restaurant theme of giving celebrity monikers to sandwiches. Hear how specialties carry the names of politicians, ranging from Senator Barbara Mikulski, the open-faced tuna, to Annapolis Fire Chief David Stokes, ham, turkey, Swiss, lettuce, and tomato on whole wheat toast. Stephanie, Chicken Ruth's is a real favorite for me. We've been there twice. I cannot wait to get back and eat here. It is a fun place.
Yeah, well, the boys will just eat their milkshakes all day. But they have they're actually – one of their specials is crepe cakes. Their crepe cakes are famous and delicious. And
Stephanie always orders the best thing.
Yeah.
And that's what you ordered.
That's what
I got.
Order.
I got a Reuben. It was
yeah,
awesome.
Which you like it too. So, you know, and then you have some of my crab cake.
When we talked about on road food on episode 7, I said I had a turkey Reuben and you said that's not a real Reuben.
Well,
I just had a memory from over 120 episodes ago.
I don't think it is. I don't know. The whole substitute turkey for everything
Let's
else.
Let's not rehash that argument. Now, your campground recommendation for Chicken Ruth's is the Capitol KOA. The Capitol KOA is about 15 minutes away. Now, if you were staying at the Cherry Hill RV Resort, you could also go, but it's a little bit of a further drive. But those are two really nice campground options that'll get you to Annapolis. Annapolis is a really great place for a day trip, largely because of the tour that we took through the Naval Academy.
Yeah, we love Annapolis now. We've been twice, and both times we just had really lovely days there, even with the kids, even though we couldn't take them in any of like the cute little shops that we see lining the road, which appear to be adorable.
Well, we went in a few. You went in the wine shop.
Yeah.
I went in a bookstore.
Well, we went in the bookstore, yeah. So there was, but definitely the tour, walking around, it's a great place to go. Good food. This is
great place
of
for a romantic
mm-hmm.
weekend too. Maybe we should go back there for our first date weekend.
Ever. Our first date weekend ever.
No.
All right.
All right. Why don't we go to our home state of New Jersey? Not necessarily known for camping, certainly known for good road food. Let's go to White House Sub Shop, which is actually honored as the 100 top restaurants in road food out of the 1,000. I'll read a little bit from Jane and Michael Stern. What makes a White House sub so good is more than superb bread and quality cold cuts. Its virtue is imparted by the artistry of its builders, the profusion of cold cuts without a hint of glut, the symmetry of ingredients, the spring of the lettuce applied in all the right places, the perfect splash of oil. And there's the astounding size. One whole sub is close to a yard long, requiring a string of paper plates to hold it. Now, we just ate at White House Subs about a month or so ago after we worked the Atlantic City RV show and did the seminars. We got a little hungry, didn't we?
Yeah, we actually had everybody. It was so funny. We were telling everybody at the manufacturers, at like the JCO
reps
and everything.
We were telling all the JCO reps, you better go to White House.
Look, if you don't go to White House, then you haven't lived, you know. But White House has a long history. Like my family actually is from southern New Jersey. And I clearly remember my great-grandfather's 100th birthday was held in like a ritzy kind of joint in Ocean City. It was like a hall kind of a thing and it was all fancy. And then somebody went to White House. You know how everybody gets like after a party, everybody wants to kick off their fancy shoes and like sit back and just relax. Somebody ran over to White House Subs and came back with just enormous White House Subs at like 8 o'clock at night and we all stuffed our faces.
We got like
you know?
Three whole subs and we brought home food for all of the boys
oh, yeah.
and the babysitter.
And the babysitter. We were like, don't worry, babysitter, we're bringing you home White House Subs.
And
you
it
know?
Truly really is.
It's
like,
a treat. It's also, like you're giving a present to somebody.
It's a New Jersey dive, too. And there's photos on the wall of like Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., all the Rat Pack people. Presidents have eaten there. I mean, this is a famous place. Everyone famous that comes through Atlantic City goes, eats a sub, has their picture taken there.
If you think you've ever tasted a sub, like, and you haven't eaten at White House subs, like, you haven't. You know, like, it's just – it's not like a better sub. It's like in a category all of its own.
Yeah, it's
like
not fair to compare to other subs. Right. It's the platonic ideal of
a
sub.
It is. It's amazing. Always
now, you could camp in Cape May. It's a little bit of a day trip to go from Cape May to Atlantic City. Steph, is it about an hour from Cape May?
To,
not even an hour.
Not even.
So you could stay at Holly Shores or Seashore Campsites in Cape May. Those are premier RV resorts in southern New Jersey, and you could certainly go hit up Atlantic City for the day. And go to White House subs. All right. Are you ready to move on?
Yep.
Why don't we go to North Carolina? Snappy lunch.
You had me. I was like, North Carolina? What's in North? Because, you know, I was associating that with Virginia since we were staying in Virginia.
I flipped through North Carolina thinking we wouldn't find one. But Mount Airy, North Carolina, where you find Snappy Lunch, is just right over the border from Virginia. So we stayed at the Fancy Gap KOA, and we went and visited Mount Airy for the day. Now, Mount Airy is famous because it is the real-life Mayberry from the Andy Griffith Show. Snappy Lunch was ridiculously awesome. Let me read a few lines from Jane and Michael Stern about it. Few customers of Snappy Lunch get a plain pork chop sandwich. The ritual here in Mount Airy, Andy Griffith's hometown, and the inspiration for TV's Mayberry, is to have it all the way, which means dressed with tomato, chopped onion, mustard, meaty sweet chili, and fine-cut cabbage slaw speckled with green peppers and onions. And that's what Stephanie ordered.
Of course it is. I don't know how you order anything else. Yes, of course I ordered the thing to order there. The pork chop sandwich was so good. It was yummy. And everything there is so unfancy. It's not even funny. All the sandwiches are served like in the wax paper, cut in half with a bag of Lay's chips.
The grilled cheese sandwiches the boys got are like $2 each.
Yeah, and with a bag
dog's
of chips.
A hot like $1.50. Our entire meal for the five of us was less than $20, I swear.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Our day in Mount Airy was one of my 10 favorite travel days ever. Snappy Lunch was a hoot. And then I went and got my hair cut at Floyd's Barbershop next door.
You cleaned yourself up. Do you even remember what you ordered?
I think I...
You know what I ordered because I ordered
the
best thing.
You got the right thing. I may have just done grilled cheese with the boys.
You probably did. You're like, you're always so scared.
If I go back, I will totally order
the all the way. Sandwich.
Now, we camped at the Fancy Gap KOA, as I think I mentioned. That is a gorgeous KOA on the side of the mountain. Cool breezes. It's 10 degrees cooler up there than down below. Beautiful
sights.
Sadly,
changing
ownership.
Lovely owners.
Good luck to the new owners.
Yeah.
Beautiful back in doggy sites with fences and doggy areas. So a really cool campground, and then you want to combo that with Snappy Lunch in Mount Airy. Let's go to South Carolina. We love South Carolina.
We do. Everybody knows that.
We could live in South Carolina. Maybe one day we will live in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. Let's go to Charleston. Do you want to go eat some road food in Charleston?
Yeah. As I mentioned in our interview, I mentioned this one in our interview with Michael Stern.
So South Carolina and in Charleston, we're talking about the Hominy Grill. Let me read a little bit from Jane and Michael Stern. This is a really famous road food joint. Our first meal at the Hominy Grill was breakfast, and it was spectacular. The sausage patties that came alongside our sunny-side-up eggs were rugged and crusty and brilliantly spiced, a joy when pushed through some yolk or sandwiched inside a tall biscuit. Bacon was excellent, too. Double thick, crisp, and full-flavored, just beginning to be cosseted in the biscuit or eaten in the alternating mouthfuls of smooth, textured grits. Stephanie, what did we think of the Hominy Grill? A little fancy for a road food joint.
Yeah, exactly. And also, I think that we did not go for breakfast. And I wonder if that was our greatest downfall because we did have a lot of good food there. And the boys, the biscuits were like a runaway favorite for the boys. Mac and cheese, they definitely had some solids. I think we had chicken and waffles there.
Lunch was impressive. It wasn't mind-blowing. And we do think we need to go back for breakfast.
Yeah, so I had their shrimp and grits, which everybody raves about. And they were good. But since I had better shrimp and grits at some other places in South Carolina, I was like, oh, you know, like these didn't knock
you
my socks off.
You get spoiled in Charleston, though. I mean, we went off book in Charleston. Like, we went out of the road food book, and we started finding all kinds of other places,
too. Oh,
we ate
so much in Charleston.
You know, I mean, you could do a book on Charleston. Let's go a little bit north of Charleston to the Seawee Restaurant in Allendaw, South Carolina. It's right across the street from a really cool place for a day trip called the Center for the Birds of Prey. This is an all-time road food classic for me. It's the Seawee Restaurant. Okay, let me read a little bit from Jane and Michael Stern. Daily specials are chalked up on a board country fried steak, whole catfish, Jamaican jerk chicken, buffalo shrimp or oysters fried in a spicy buffalo wing style, fish stew by the cup or bowl. We are partial to the regular menu and its roster of fried seafood. You can get a platter or a sandwich with very good extra large french fries and coleslaw on the side. Our shrimp were snapping firm and veiled in a fine, crisp crust.
I have a blog post on this restaurant.
Oh, you did a great post about
one of
it.
Yeah, it's definitely one of like my like in the crew of my favorite ones because the boys were not good at this restaurant.
They were really stinking bad.
Yeah, and it had been a long day. We had done a lot. There was like the fire ant debacle at the Center for the Birds of Prey and everything. But all of that couldn't cloud the fact that the food here was fantastic. Like we even had fried oysters. We had like fried everything.
Could
like
eat inside
said.
Or outside.
The and fried green tomatoes.
Fried green tomatoes were so good. We love road food joints where you can eat outside. Now for both this and the Hominy Grill, you could obviously camp at James Island County Park in Charleston, which we loved, or you could come up from Myrtle Beach. It's not crazy to do. We road tripped up to Seawee from Myrtle Beach, KOA.
Down. We road tripped down.
No, we went from, yes, down.
Down.
She's right.
I'm right.
My sense of direction can occasionally be poor.
Yeah, it's under an hour from Myrtle Beach down to the Center for Birds of Prey. And this is right across the street from there. So it's a really nice 1-2 punch there. Nice combo.
Yeah, and so many great campgrounds around both Myrtle Beach and Charleston. Okay, do you want to go up to Michigan?
Yes. All the way up to Michigan.
Do you even remember the road food joint that we did in Traverse City, Michigan?
Yes, I do. This was like the classic that people think of when they think of these like the 50s diners and everything, shiny red vinyl seats.
Don's Drive-In in Traverse City, Michigan. We camped at the Holiday Park in Traverse City. Let me read a little bit from Jane and Michael Stern about Don's Drive-In, which is actually a drive-in. Don's opened the year Elvis joined the Army. Selections on its jukebox evoke days of American mid-century car culture at its prime, and the ambiance is vintage rock and roll. Hubcaps and album covers decorate the walls, and you can dine inside or in your car where meals are served on window trays. I'm going to skip ahead a little. Whatever you get to eat, there should be no question about the beverage. Make it a milkshake. Don's blends its shakes to order, either large or small, both big enough to fill at least a couple of glasses, and both thick enough to require powerful suction with the straw. Chocolate and vanilla shakes are good all the time, but in the summer, order a cherry shake. It is made with fresh, local cherries.
The shakes were enormous, and we did order the cherry shakes, and they were taken care of stat. And then we went paddle boarding.
The cherries. Oh, that might have been a mistake.
Yeah.
Cherry shakes and then SUPing.
No, we worked it
off. But those cherry shakes with local cherries were astonishingly good. I got to be honest. The cheeseburgers and the fries were totally solid to me. Nothing close
Nothing,
to
right.
classic.
No.
That cherry milkshake was absolute classic.
I think I had gravy fries there because that's not something you see outside of New Jersey a lot. And they were on this menu. So I was like, oh, what? I'll try that. And I think I got gravy fries and they were yummy.
So those were some of our favorite road food joints, along with some campground recommendations to go along with them. I'm really excited to dip into the Pacific Northwest section of road food. There are so many restaurants recommended in Portland and Seattle. So we're going to be using this book as we lead up to our big Pacific Northwest trip. We want to thank our sponsors. We want to thank the Thetford Corporation, Jayco, Cabela's, and Highway West Vacations.
And thank you so much to Michael Stern. It was just such a pleasure to get to talk to him and hear more about the great history of him exploring the road food joints of America. And everybody, we will see you at the campground.
Or we'll see you at the road food joint.
Bye-bye.